Mauna.
It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warmer G was on the streets trying to consume some skirts for the E so I could get some phones. Rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G.
All right, that is obviously Regulators by Nate Dogg and Warren G. And welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gygax, and I am here once again with the incomparable Michael Brazemley.
Hi, everyone.
So today I want to get a little bit philosophical, and I want to talk about enforcement mechanisms. This is how contracts work, or what makes contracts work. You know, if you think about an agreement, that any two people come to an agreement, Michael and I have an agreement about what this podcast episode is going to be about. And it helps that I wrote this big old thing today that, you know, like a script, essentially, or an outline of what I want to talk about. And
that's what's great about Alan. He prepares.
I do prepare. That's one of the reasons this podcast is not hot garbage, because, yeah, I prepare. I know we have an episode where Michael and I didn't prepare, and we kind of ramble. And as I record this, it hasn't even been released yet because we need to prepare. But I will release that episode because we do talk about some important things. But anyway, what if we have this agreement and then we get on here and I just derail and I start talking about something else? But Michael really wanted to talk about these enforcement mechanisms because Michael has stories to tell and Michael has valuable things to add to this. What do we do? Well, we're going to have to work that out. And that's where, you know, that's what agreement is. We've already agreed. This is the way we're going to do it. And now if somebody doesn't abide by that agreement, you got a problem. So on the surface level, the agreement is really only as good as the honor of the people who agree to it. If I say, yeah, I'm going to have this podcast about enforcement mechanisms, and then I come on and I start talking about Michael's sister, that doesn't honor our agreement. And so we have a problem. So yes, we both agreed, but you can't always trust people. And that's where contracts come in. So with a contract, with this agreement, by its very nature, it exists because both parties said, yeah, that looks good to me. And Michael, feel free to jump in at any point. Anything you want to add is great. So with that agreement, we come up with this contract, both parties sign off on it. We say, yeah, this works. This is good for both of us. And we have a contract like that with management. It is our national agreement, our labor agreement. What is it officially called? The contract. We just call it the contract.
Yeah, but it's a joint contract.
Yeah, so we have the JCAM, joint contract administration manual. Right, which not only says what the terms of the contract are, the national agreement. That's what it's called.
And it's signed by NALC,
right,
by the Postmaster General,
yeah,
and the Congress.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, as well. So again, both sides have agreed to this contract. And in the case of the JCAM, the Joint Contract Administration Manual, not only have we agreed that this is what the terms of our contract are, but this is also what the terms mean and how we're going to enforce it and how it's going to actually work. And so we have a lot that we've already agreed to. Both sides have agreed that this is the way we're going to conduct ourselves. And your union brothers, sisters, siblings, they put work into this contract. Management on their end, whatever their people are called, their monkeys, uncles or whatever, they put that work into this contract. And this is the agreement. So with our own contract, what happens when people don't honor that agreement? This every day we run into this.
I'm sure carriers know that management agree to, they keep breaking the rules.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. Carriers are all too familiar with the fact that management does not honor this agreement. And so when you have this agreement that's not honored, then the agreement becomes, so first, you got three steps to this, right? The first step is the agreement itself. Hey, you and I agree on this. This is what we're going to do. Second step, to make things a little more binding, is you have a contract. But then what happens when somebody disregards the contract? Well, that's when we get into what is the point of this episode, 5 minutes in, the enforcement mechanism. And any agreement is really only as good as its enforcement mechanisms. If Michael and I have an agreement that we're going to talk about enforcement mechanisms on this podcast, and then I start talking about Michael's sister instead, Michael, there's not a lot Michael can do about it because it's my podcast and I can tell him to go home.
And you know, it's my sister's birthday. You don't have to keep
it. Yeah, that's what made me think of it. Yeah. Yeah, that's. I've never seen Michael's sister. I've never met Michael's sister. I don't know when. I'm sure she's very nice.
Well, she's in Texas.
Oh, there you go. All right. So she's a cowgirl, apparently. She ropes steer
for a living. No, she was actually
from
Boston. She's from Colorado, went to Boston for many years.
Oh, look at that.
And now she's in Texas.
All right. Well, look, I'm not going to disregard our agreement. I'm not going to spend this podcast talking about your sister. So anyway, any contract is only as good as its enforcement mechanisms. And this is our problem, because our contract is clearly lacking in enforcement mechanisms. And Michael, how do we know that the enforcement mechanisms we have aren't good enough?
Because management keeps breaking them.
That is exactly right. And this is one of the things I love about Michael, is that I didn't plan that exchange. That is not part of my outline. But I know every time I throw it to Michael, he's going to hit it.
Once in a while, I'm going, what?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's rare. Yeah. It's nice to be able to trust him in that way. He's a good podcast partner. So anyway, yeah, you can tell by how often management violates the terms. So what are our enforcement mechanisms? Well, they're pretty much laid out in Article 15, the grievance and arbitration procedure. So there are some things that can be addressed in court. There's some things that maybe OSHA or the Department of Labor or even the postal inspectors.
If they still exist with
current
administration, what they're trying to do.
So that is an issue. But at least as we have it, you know, we also have the Office of the Inspector General. There's other enforcement mechanisms, but generally our recourse is the grievance procedure. It's to file a grievance. And for me, on a personal level, the whole idea that we have to regularly file grievances is maddening to me, because management already agreed. They already said, okay, this is the way we're going to do things. Michael, do you have any idea how many grievances our branch filed this year?
Last year,
in 2024.
Was over 2,000.
Over 2,000. And in Seattle, whatever that branch number is, they filed like 3,000 or 5,000 or some ludicrous number of grievances. And that's a problem.
You know what the big problem with that?
Tell me.
Is the branch is happy to file that many grievances. They should not be happy about it.
Because
it's not working.
Yeah, right. And one of the things, I think this was when C. Moline was on Next Generation Carriers, another plug for that fantastic podcast. She talked about one of the reasons why it got so high is because management wasn't cooperating. And so the carriers or the steward would request information, and now one grievance would turn into three grievances because management wouldn't meet in good faith and they wouldn't give information. And now we have multiples.
The information request.
Yeah. Okay?
That is the number one thing they put on management violating and with the unions for NLRB.
The National Labor Relations Board.
Our current administration is trying to get rid of.
Yeah, it's being gutted. Mm-hmm. Michael and I had meetings set up because of the shit going on in our branch with the National Labor Relations Board. And the day that I was supposed to meet with my officer, that meeting had to be canceled because like the whole administration was thrown into turmoil. A bunch of people got fired. And
illegally, by the way.
Yeah, well.
But this
current
leadership we got don't care about those laws.
No, that they sure don't. So anyway, so let's get back to our laws, right? The stuff that we have a little more control over. And so again, management's already agreed. Now, in fairness to management, fairness that they don't deserve, but in fairness to management, it is a big contract. And the JCAM is big and the manuals are big. And we can't expect some random supervisor to know everything that's in that contract.
The least they can do is at least read the contract once.
You'd like to think. Yeah. Yeah. But I know. No, they don't.
I don't know a single supervisor or any managers have read the contract.
No. Nor the M39. Nor the ELM. Mm-hmm. None of that stuff.
Not even F21.
Is that the timekeeping one? Yeah, dude. So there's all these provisions. And so maybe I'll give them the first grievance, you know, that, okay, we had to file this grievance because it's some nuance in the contract that they just weren't aware of. And they can claim ignorance on that first grievance. But a lot of this stuff, and that's only the first grievance, But a lot of this stuff, like Article 8, the part that governs how overtime is distributed and people's work hours, that's a daily occurrence. And so they have no excuse that they can claim that they didn't know. There's no way they don't know how this stuff is supposed to be distributed. So that means that they're willfully violating the contract. And I like to tell them when they're doing that, hey, you know that's a contractual violation.
You know, one of the complaints by management that when you're in a trying to settle on a grievance is that, oh, we're losing a lot of money in the post office. Then you know what my answer to that is?
Abide by the contract?
Then follow the contract, and you won't lose any money.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it, right? That should be a disincentive. The grievance arbitration procedure should stop these violations. But it doesn't. It doesn't stop them. So why not? Why does management continue to violate the contract even after it's been brought to their attention? We've successfully filed and won a grievance. Why do they keep violating the contract?
Can I tell you a story?
Please.
Okay.
Well, let me give my answer first and then... All right, go ahead. I'll trust you. Well, tell your story.
My story is that how my enforcement at my station, because of my grievance, and how I stopped it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now... during COVID, you know, management was breaking Article 8s like crazy.
They were. Yeah. I mean, forcing like people to work overtime in violation of the contract.
I filed hundreds of grievances out of my station. Okay? But because of the stupid manager that we had, she wanted to keep delaying it and delaying it and delaying it and delaying it for months.
Like delaying meeting on the grievances?
Yeah, delaying it on for me to work on any of the grievances.
Oh, my God. So were you getting extensions?
So I was getting extensions after extensions. Uh-huh. I was kind of allowing it because of COVID, you know, and everybody's working all kinds of hours. I was kind of giving them a slack, allowing it. But it just kept going on for months and months and months. And you know what finally what happened?
Tell me. I know what happened.
I disagreed to it. They said, I'm done. I'm not doing extending anymore. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm sort of, it has to come with both parties, and I don't read it anymore. It's been months now.
Right.
Okay, you got to give me time to work on these. Yeah. And so, because I have to work on it still. Yeah, I haven't worked on it yet. These are months of all these overtime and equitability, all that stuff that didn't get done.
Wow.
Okay, Article 8. And so finally, I get the whole thing together because I have the information. At least they provided me the information. I sent tubs of grievances and information. I bring it to the hall, and I talk to my the vice president, and he goes, what is this? I go, this is all the grievances that got delayed, been extended. He's like, what the heck is this? I'm going, well, I didn't want to wait any longer. I think we need to get this done.
Yeah.
Okay? And so he didn't like that at all. Next thing I knew, they remanded it back to me, saying, and then... The remand letter actually says from the former labor representative for the post office and him, basically says to give.
You can't get to formal aid without having your informal meeting first. So cover that. What happened at the informal meeting?
The formal aid meeting, which was down at the hall.
No, dude, but you had to have your informal first.
There was no meeting because there was no more extensions. Management
wouldn't meet with you, so you had to...
Because they didn't give me any time for me to work on it.
So you had to move it along.
Exactly. I had to let it move along. Okay. Which is because since I didn't get any time to work on it, I had to give it to the hall.
Right, I got you.
Now, obviously, the hall's like, whoa, I can't work on all these.
Right, right.
I don't have time to work on it. They got all the other grievances that's coming up they got to work on, especially during COVID. I mean, I think on that year, I think we did over 5,000 grievances, I believe. Okay. So anyway, out of my station, and it got remanded back, and they on the letter, on the remand letter, says, you have to give the steward as much time as a steward required to finish on working on these grievances settle it at that office. And this
was both parties of Formal A agreed to that remand. They have to agree. Yeah,
they remanded it back.
Okay.
So my first request to work on this was 80 hours.
Okay? I love it.
So I only worked on these grievances. So now you got me off the floor for delivering the mail for 2 weeks to work just to work on grievances, okay?
Wow.
Needless to say, some of the equitability equitability was $70,000 for one of the equitability.
Oh my God!
Okay? And the second quarter was over $50,000. That's $120,000 just in two quarters of equitability.
Oh my God, dude! I thought I was doing great when I got like $5,000 in equitability.
And so, from what I gather, when I did all the Article 8 work, it was over $500,000 in grievance money that I won.
Oh my God!
And guess what happened?
I don't want to know.
Well, that well, the magic got kicked
off. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Something good happened.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
And so because so much money came out of my station.
Right.
That any time to spend any money out of my station has to get approved from the postmaster first now.
Wow.
Okay. No matter what.
Right.
Because we spent all their funds for my station.
Right.
They're, what do we call it? They have
the grievance pool.
No. They have all the money to use it on buying supply.
Oh,
buying,
yeah, yeah. Right.
You know, they had all these funds for to use it at every station.
Yeah.
I wiped it off for a few years.
Dude.
Because that includes the grievance
okay,
money.
This is an important caveat. I know it's not a big deal.
So this is the enforcement.
Yeah. So I want to add, you didn't wipe it out. Management wiped it out by breaking the contract.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Go ahead.
Because of that. They did not break any mandates anymore because of that.
All of a sudden, they figured out how to abide by the contract.
Because of that, equitability went from $70,000 down to maybe a few hundred dollars.
Nice.
Because of that, nobody was working past 12 hours anymore. Nobody was actually working past 10 hours anymore.
Yeah. Almost like it's possible to obey the contract.
Yeah. And this is right after COVID. We were getting almost no grievance on Article 8.
Right. That's awesome.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, so...
That's the enforcement.
Right. So to get back to why management continues violating the contract, because they can.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not doing enough to stop them. And you just heard from Michael what happens when you do finally do enough to stop them. They stop.
Mm-hmm.
And the enforcement mechanism that's built into the contract, in the way that it's being used now broadly, it just doesn't have the teeth that's necessary to stop these violations. Or, as we see in Michael's case, the contract does have the teeth, and it's our union that's toothless, not the contract. Because if you get a fighter like Michael in there, they're going to make management pay. And eventually, they're going to get that cooperation, that agreement. Yeah.
Yes, I know sometimes as stewards, we look like, oh, why are we keep filing these grievances and nothing seems to be working? They're just filing it, but you just do it over and over and over. And then after a while, when they keep breaking it, make it progressive.
Well, that's exactly right.
And when you make it progressive, it's more money, higher or double it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Say, hey, you know, we asked you to stop and you're not stopping.
Right. And so we get these feckless, pointless grievance settlements that say management will abide by the contract. And to me, the whole idea of a grievance settlement like that is ridiculous because that's what the contract already is. We already have that by the mere fact that we have a contract. That is the point of the contract.
That's the lazy settlement that comes from our formula and business agent's office when we get something answered.
Right.
With that saying, follow the contract. That's just laziness.
Right. We already had that. Yeah, that changes nothing. We already had.
And that's the reason why management keeps on violating the rules because of those settlements.
That is exactly right. All right, so what does management try to... What's management's defense? What do they say on their end? Well, a big...
We have the right to manage.
That's it. That's right. That's what's in my notes. Michael is so tuned into this. Because, yeah, management tries to use Article 3 of our national agreement to defend their actions. So... Article 3 is not this get out of jail free card. Article 3 gives management the right to manage. And it says, quote, the employer...
Or the right to mismanage.
Yeah, or the right to mismanage. Yeah, that is correct.
Since they don't seem to know how to manage.
Right. So it reads, quote, the employer shall have the exclusive right, end quote. And then it goes on to list all these different things that management has the right to do. And I'll give them to you in broad strokes. One is to direct employees. So they have the right to tell you like what you're supposed to do, that they can give you instructions. Next, the right to hire and fire and take disciplinary action. Yeah, that is their right. Granted, right? These are reasonable things. They have the right to maintain efficiency. It's kind of vague, but like if they think, you know, that... I don't know, it would be more efficient for you to case with your left hand. Maybe they can tell you to do that. You know, whatever it is, whatever efficiency. Do you have an example of something that might fall under that right to... Oh, like with the flow chart in the morning, like the way you do your operations. That's actually laid out in the M39, that there's supposed to be a flow of morning operations to prevent excessive backtracking. So you're not having to walk back and forth across the station a bunch of times.
Management likes to use efficiency, but then they don't do it either. And so the argument always comes as, well, if you want to believe that this is the efficient way, then how come you're not following this flow chart?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know, so there's that argument.
I'm not saying management is good at this. I'm saying that these are their rights. The next one is to determine work methods and personnel. So a lot of that does have to be done in cooperation with the union, you know, on work methods. We come to like mutual agreements. And personnel, dude, that's a big one for me. Because this just came up on a Facebook group, I don't remember which one, where somebody asked, like, we have carriers getting mandated every day. The problem is we don't have enough overtime carriers. And so I can't file Article 8 grievances because they are following the contract.
Then you need to file a 271G M39 where management...
Well, this is due to short staffing. It's not because the routes are too long.
I know.
It's because you're short.
270, but they need to file 271 or file because it is management's duty to make sure all routes are 8 hours.
Well, yeah, but okay. That's not the issue here. The issue in this case is they have an 8-hour route. They don't have enough carriers to fill all the routes.
And it is the management's responsibility to properly staff.
Yeah, so that's this one here, right? Mm-hmm. To determine work methods and personnel. And so, you know, that was my advice. Yeah. Like, look, they may not be violating Article 8 of the contract, but they could be violating Article 3. Because they're not staffing enough people.
Right. And then management said, well, nobody wants to work for the post office. Oh, well, maybe because our pay is so
low. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we should pay people. Yeah, maybe we got to come up with something. Yeah.
And that is, again, management's responsibility to make sure that they're able to hire people.
Right. So I got two more exclusive rights of management. The next one is to prescribe a uniform standard, like so they can tell you what your uniforms have to look like. And dude, I've heard about new postmasters coming in and saying, like, in the winter, you have to wear a tie. And that if you wear shorts or if you wear long pants, you also have to wear long sleeves.
Not for carriers.
Yeah, dude, that's actually in the ELM. And those really are the rules. Just most managers don't enforce them.
Wow.
But have you? So you've never worked at a station where that's enforced, I take it.
No,
or where they try to enforce it.
Because there's a new rule, new policy that says you don't have to wear a tie.
I haven't seen it. It's not in the ELM.
Well, look on your board. What is allowed for you to wear as uniforms?
Maybe.
There is actually they're supposed to put it up.
Is it some settlement?
Clock rings. Yeah.
Oh.
On by the clock.
Yeah.
They had to post on what is allowed and what's required to wear as uniforms. And tie is not on there.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Well, good. I actually have two.
Clerks do.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense because they're in direct dealing with the public.
But again, they allow clerks to do whatever.
Back in the day, when we used to get adequate uniform allotments, I had some extra one time and actually bought two postal ties that I still have sitting in my closet. And I've worn them a couple of times, and I would wear them sometimes when I taught in the Carrier Academy to give the illusion of professionalism.
So tomorrow, if I remember, I'll go take a picture of it and send it to you.
Oh, yeah, dude, please do. Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, and then the last one is they have the right to react to unforeseen emergencies. And this is like one-off things, that there's a flood.
Well, just like fire in California.
Yeah, they're the fires, right, that they can do what needs to do to deal with those emergencies. So management...
Because I heard some horror stories of management not doing their job right.
I'm sure that's true. So yeah, and let's talk about that for a sec, because these aren't just rights that management has. These are also obligations that management has. And if they're not doing that, you can hold them to task.
And management always says, well, I have the right to manage. And they go, well, you're right. Well, you have the right to mismanage.
Yeah, but don't spoil my punchline here. Because management keeps saying that. They use that as their get out of jail free card. Because they leave out the most important part of that first sentence where it says, the employer shall have the exclusive right. The whole sentence reads, the employer shall have the exclusive right subject to the provisions of this agreement and consistent with applicable laws and regulations.
Yeah, laws.
Yeah.
Right? Because management does break some laws.
They do.
And
it's true.
And I have filed grievances. They broke laws.
Right.
And then I get, they're like, what, this is nothing in the contract. Yeah, right. But it's violation Article 3 because
they're supposed
to follow the laws.
Right. Yeah, if they tell you to drive an LLV where the blinker is broken, you know, not only is it a safety violation, it also violates the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, good steward is going to file Article 14 and Article 3.
Our station manager required all medical aid to provide all information and the reason why they're on medical aid.
Briefly explain for the listeners
all
what
information,
medical aid is.
Description of all ailments, all description of all their flaws and reasons and why that you need 8 hours a you can only work 8 hours a day.
There you go. That's what a medical aid is. It's a medical restriction that you can only work 8 hours in a day. And so they wanted you to turn in
personal information
to the supervisor,
to the station manager.
They're not medical.
It violates HIPAA laws.
Yeah.
Okay. I filed that grievance.
And nice.
Our office, one of the officers said, that's not a grievance. Thankfully, dude. You know, Jonathan. So that, that is a grievance and I'll work on it.
Oh my God. So whatever management does, it has to abide by the contract. And as Michael points out, the law. Mm-hmm. So what do we do? You know, I'm not like, what should we do to make this system work? Now, I'm not an expert on this, right? I'm no Corey Walton. I'm not an expert grievance handler. Michael is pretty good at it, as you've heard. But I'm just an alternate steward, and even not even that right now. So here's the thing. If management doesn't respect the contract enough to abide by it, and they don't respect the union enough to abide by the settled grievances, then that's where we get to the second part of Article 15. We turn to that outside authority, arbitration, because they will respect the decision of an arbitrator, at least in theory.
In theory, they're supposed to. In theory,
right. And so, you know, from what I've learned from listening to Corey Walton and from others is that arbitrators, they're fully aware that the statement management will abide by the contract is meaningless because it just reiterates the contract. So what phrase do arbitrators want to see in previous grievance settlements?
Before we go to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Another story.
Okay. It'll be quick. Go for it, please.
Okay. Is that I want everybody who is able to go check the memorandums, the MRS.
Yep.
Okay. Go to M1967.
Oh, okay. What's that one?
That is a district court judge, Judge Chutkins. I think that was the judge who did it. Basically, the post office didn't like it because the arbitrator said that because of multiple cease and desist violations.
Yeah, that's the phrase they're looking for. Yep.
And because of multiple cease and desist violations, and there's a progressive discipline to management for violating those rules.
Right.
And it's gone into like $350,000 or something like that to pay each carrier this amount of money to split that money. Okay. And because post office did not like it, they filed a charge against the NALC saying they're not allowed to do that. And the arbitrator was overstepping his authority.
Sure.
Okay. And he went through the district court. And the district court basically says the post office is wrong.
Nice.
And here's the reason why.
Okay.
Okay. Because the post office is like a separate entity that, so they're like a corporation. Mm. So therefore, they can be sued like a corporation. They don't have sovereign immunity. And so because the arbitrator is what the post office uses, so therefore the arbitrator has the right to issue their decisions and settlements
that's good
to the
stuff.
Postal Service. And that basically gave us the authority that, yes, because the post office is a separate entity of the government and they work it like a corporation, that we can do the things like as if they're a corporation.
There you go. Dude, good stuff. Look at Michael bringing the knowledge. So yeah, as Michael said, the arbitrators, they want to see that phrase, cease and desist. The actual words, cease and desist. That's what arbitrators respond to. Now, again, I've never been to an arbitration. This is what I pick up from other people who have done arbitration.
I filed grievance in one arbitrations, but I have actually never filed an arbitration.
Yeah, there you go.
That would be our superhero.
Yes, the superhero does do that. Yep. Okay, so when we have these multiple cease and desist, then the arbitrator can see that when management continues to violate the contract, they've already been told cease and desist, and cease and desist is insufficient. And that's the case that we're making. It's like, hey, we've told them to stop. We've told them not to do it again. And they've said, okay, we'll stop. And okay, we won't do it again. Right? That's what Corey always says. You stop and you don't do it again. You cease and desist. So when the arbitrator sees that that telling them to stop isn't good enough, that's how we get escalated remedies.
I have another story.
Go for it.
Okay. On another carrier, when she first got to my station and she came from there, where she had a stroke from this other station. Okay.
Okay.
And
she had a stroke
at another
station. Medical event.
Right.
Okay. And then she transferred to your station. Okay.
And then she bid to my station because she was healthy enough that she can actually start working again.
All right.
But the managers that we got don't like people that had strokes. And because
that's a very specific prejudice, but okay.
I know. Well, yeah. Because what happens when you had a stroke?
Well, like if it, depending on the severity, like one of your arms doesn't work real well anymore.
And you move a lot slower.
Yeah, and you move slower. Yeah, sure. Okay.
And so they always pick on people who are slower.
Absolutely. Okay?
And so when somebody with a stroke who their movements have slowed down, they're going to obviously try to pick on
them. Dude, that's so messed up.
And so this carrier always wrote statements for me, and I filed grievances.
Right.
And filed grievances. But a lot of the settlements that came from the hall was management need to stop, harassing.
Be nice,
If M30 and section 115.4 to have a mutual respect.
Right.
And they kept selling to that thing.
Yeah. Okay?
Over and over and over. And
which shows how meaningless it is.
Yeah. And so she was not happy. She thought that I was not doing anything.
Right.
Okay.
And yeah, because you're probably asking for remedies that are higher. And this is the problem with the union not having your back is you go in there with an aggressive settlement and management just says no because they know the folks above you in the food chain will settle for a lesser settlement.
So one thing that I did not know is that she was an EEO representative.
An EEO, Equal Employment Representative. Yeah. Okay. Oh, she actually did EEOs
before.
Oh, now you're talking.
Okay, which I did not know in the time. Okay. So she was saying...
Oh, I didn't list that in my list of enforcement agencies. Yeah, good
one. But she basically
also has not fared well under the new administration.
She was like, I'm filing EEO, but I need information on, what you filed and so forth.
Right.
Sure. I give her I think it was a dozen grievance settlements
nice.
That basically said, management, just stop harassing this carrier, right?
Right.
And then she goes... She looked through all of it. She's like, your arguments are great. I don't understand why they couldn't forward it through.
Isn't that something?
Okay. I'm like, well, at least it says a dozen times that it needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
Okay.
It still has a plenty persuasive value.
To make this long story short, it finally went to the court.
Okay.
And the judge advocate or whatever who's doing the EEO.
Right.
And said that, hey, I have copies of these grievances on this station manager. That who was harassing this carrier, here's the grievance settlement.
Mm-hmm.
Brought all the grievance settlements right to the judge advocate.
Nice.
And then the judge advocate went through. He said, wow, this manager's a problem.
Yeah, indeed. It's funny how somebody from the outside can see that real easily. Yeah.
And so the settlement came out where this station manager can no longer manage at a station where this carrier is at.
Dude, that's a big win.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's because... I did what I can because, unfortunately, I can't control what the Formula A does. I can only do it as a steward.
Right.
And because this lady who was an EEO representative knew what she was doing, that she was used my grievance to settle on something to help herself. Okay. So sometimes when I say cover your ass.
Sure.
She was doing exactly
that. Yeah, you still have to do your part. Absolutely.
But thankfully, I filed grievances. Every time she asked me to file a grievance, she thought that I wasn't doing any of it.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah. But eventually, she saw what was really going on. Yeah.
Now she's my huge ally.
That's awesome. So again, we get, we build this paper trail, and that's how we get escalated remedies. And the purpose of the escalated remedy is that the pain that management feels from breaking the contract has to be greater than the pain that they would feel by abiding by the contract. Management violates Article 8 because it's easier. Because it's easier to just force a non-overtime carrier to work overtime than it is to find out and reschedule and do all this stuff. But eventually, the grievances get to a level where, that's no longer easier. It's actually like what happened with Michael with his COVID grievances. Eventually, it got to a level that, it's actually easier to just do what it says in the contract. And that's the goal, right? And so all of this is things that we do on the back end, that after management has already broken it multiple times, this is what we go after to try to get enforcement on the back end. But there's another potential solution that I like to use that attacks this on the front end. Because even more effective than just a cease and desist is what's called liquidated damages. So this is a contractual agreement that it's built into the agreement that says if management or who, you know, whatever the agreement is, if the agreement is broken, this is going to be the penalty. And I love doing that because if management breaks the contract again, they already know this is what the penalty is going to be.
And one thing I really like to use is on the issue statement and mm-hmm. make sure you name the manager who is violating the rules. Okay.
Okay.
Then Jonathan actually talked to somebody from business agent's office uh-huh. and they's like, yes, we love that, but you still have to include management. That way it's all management is still liable.
Oh, right.
But we want to mention the person is doing it.
Okay.
But we also want to say the management too on top of it. Okay.
So how would you word say, that?
Did John Smith and management of post office
right, that's pretty straightforward.
Violate the such, right. you know, and so on.
What
so
about on. Like, did postal management through their agent, John Smith, violate? Is that basically the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, as long as you include
the name and
management.
Right, I gotcha.
That way, when it gets settled, saying right. this.
So you got a paper trail on that person.
Person.
And right. all of management is held right. accountable. Yeah, that's right. pretty good, dude. I like that. Yeah. So to get back to liquidated damages, you know, this is built into tons of legal contracts because what happens if somebody, like this is in real estate contracts, for example, that once somebody puts down their deposit and they sign the contract, if they decide to back out of the contract, you have created a harm. Like if the buyer backs out, you have harmed the seller. But the question is, how much have you harmed them? And it's something that can be very sticky to figure out in court. And so they just build it right into the contract that says, you know, if you back out of this contract, then you will pay liquidated damages of $5,000.
I have more stories.
Go Sorry. For it. No, please.
So I have another one where I put an issue statement that with this manager and this manager via the rules, by the management of my post office, and so on, so on, so. And he went all up to basically violated the rule on this carrier not getting steward time to be able to talk to a steward. Okay.
Okay.
And so I mentioned the two supervisors' names that was violating it, including the station, right?
Right.
Then when he came back from the step B, because I mentioned all the names, step B settlement literally says the supervisor's name uh-huh. of this person and another supervisor's name of this person that I named,
right.
and the management of my station will give the carrier time when he's needed to see a shop steward.
Ah, that's great. Dude, good stuff. So not only does management have to do this, you have to do this.
But by dude. Name.
Yeah, dude, that's so, great.
And there are a lot of postmasters or station managers right. like to get a copy of that 8190 and the settlements and so forth.
Sure, yeah.
And sees those names like, what the heck are right. you doing? Are you an
yeah,
idiot?
It puts them on the radar. Dude, yeah. I like that. That's a yeah. really good strategy. So to get back to liquidated damages, and this is pretty much going to finish us out. You know, again, what I love about it is that if management breaks the contract again, they know what that pain is going to be. And all they have to do to avoid the liquidated damages is do what it already says in the contract, to abide by the contract that they've already agreed to. And I actually find this easier to get than escalated remedies because it does something that management absolutely loves, which is it kicks the can down the road. Oh, thank God I don't have to pay a settlement now. That's going to be next time's problem. And it's easy for them to sign off on agreements like that because they don't have to do anything. But then the next time they break the contract, now you got them. And that's key because the whole idea of these grievances is they're supposed to be a disincentive. And liquidated damages is exactly designed to be a disincentive. That's why it's in legal contracts. If you break the contract, this is the penalty.
Well, I have some things on this where I hate the fact that our union has gotten to a point where follow the instruction and grieve it later, okay? And not trying to stop management from doing the stuff they're doing, okay?
They're right, they're not proactive
because
enough.
Because you look at Article 3, they're not allowed to break the law. They're not allowed to break the contract, okay? Yet they do, but then unions, oh, you know what? Let management break the rule and then we'll file a grievance later. That's the so to me seems so ridiculous in the fact that, you know, we have some in Article 3 basically says that management is not allowed to do that.
Right. Yeah. Okay? I agree.
And that's the big problem is that we're our leadership in our unit has got to the point where they think that getting money is more important.
Dude, it's business unionism.
Okay.
Yeah.
Instead of stopping the
And dude, doesn't it say in Article
stopping the hostile work environment?
Doesn't it say in Article 15 that we're supposed to try to resolve this stuff before it becomes a grievance?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the ways you do it.
Mm-hmm. And that is why, as stewards, if management is breaking a rule or whatever, what I do is always notify management, "Hey, you're in violation of Article this, this, and this. That if you do this, this, and this."
Right.
And they go, "I don't care." Okay. Dude. That's when the stewards, what they need to do is write a statement right away on what they said.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you can use that statement when they break the rule.
Right. That it's willful
saying
disregard.
That it's a willful disregard of the rule.
100%.
So that your resolve, well, you can get a lot better.
Right. Right. Because then it shows like that they already willfully, know. Yeah. They're not just
knowingly violating the rule.
Right. That's exactly right. Ah, Michael. Another great episode. You killed it again today, as usual. Guys, thank you very much for listening. When we have updates from our branch, we will definitely share them with you. We're in the investigation process right now. Don't know how. Go ahead.
I just want to let everybody know. I know it feels sometimes when these managers are breaking the rules and we do the stewards doing their grievance and it seems like nothing is happening. But you know, you still have to notify your steward that these are violating.
Right.
And then stewards, you know, they just need to keep filing that grievance. And after a time, you will get resolved. Okay. And remember the grievances too, because as long as you mention the grievance number, the previous settlements and so forth every time.
Right.
When
you build that trail.
Yeah, you build that trail because some grievances I've done, they violated the rule on this grievance number. Then this grievance number. Then this grievance number. Yeah. Next thing I knew, on my contentions, I'll have like a dozen settlements that says, "Hey, they violated, and here's the settlements, and the copies of 8190 from all those grievances." And trust me, when that gets sent to step B or higher,
right,
it makes management look worse, and we get what we want a lot easier.
There you go. Good stuff. All right, guys, thank you for tuning in. I will send you guys out with more Nate Dogg and Warren G. And thanks for listening. I will catch you all next time.
I'm getting jacked, I'm breaking myself. I can't believe they taking Warren's wealth. They took my rings, they took my Rolex. I looked at the brother, said, "Damn, what's next?"
They got my homie hemmed up and they all around. Can't none of them see him if they going straight down.